Welcome to Aspects of Riding with your host, James Kelly. For the next 60 minutes, we'll explore every aspect of riding, including how to create, format, and even sell your work. Now, let's get writing. Here's your host, James Kelly.
Hello and welcome to Aspects of Riding. I'm your host, James Kelly, and my co-host for today is Morgan St. James. Our guests are Cher Chisney and Adam J.A. Kaz, and we're going to be talking about from book to script. So first, I'd like to introduce my co-host, Morgan St. James. Morgan, please tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay. Hi, everybody. Well, I'm somebody who's had a lot of careers, and the most recent one, 20 years, is writing. I write funny mysteries, and I've done some memoirs for people who were abuse survivors. And at present, I have 18 books in publication, which includes two series. One series is The Silver Sisters Mysteries, and the other one is, you ready for this? Revenge is Fun. And all of the Revenge is Fun books have something to do with somebody getting even, although they are mysteries. And I've been a guest on James' show before, and now I'm doing an occasional gig as his co-host.
Yes.
So thank you, James.
You're welcome.
And I'm not going to go on too much about me because we have some very interesting guests with us.
Oh yeah,
today.
we have the masked author on today.
Yes, the masked author.
For those who watch the video portion, you'll have to tune in and see what we're talking about. The reason I have Morgan on with you today is because Morgan, even though it isn't an option right now, at one time she had one of the books she worked on with someone optioned to Sony Studios. You know, she's going to have a little knowledge about how all this works, and that's what we're going to be talking about today, is from book to script. And I also write scripts, so this will be a fun show. Our first guest is Cher Chisney, and Cher's been on my show before. And then we also have Adam on, as I said earlier. So I'm going to let Cher talk a little bit about who she is. Give us a little bit of your background. And by that, I mean where you were born, how you got to Australia, and that whole venture.
Oh, I came here. I was born in Singapore, and I came here in 1974.
Okay.
I'm the youngest of 19 children.
How many?
Did I hear 19?
Yeah, from one mother. My father had two wives and a concubine.
Okay.
So a very big family. So, yes, it was a fairly complex sort of family. And I actually wrote a memoir on it called The House of the 99 Closed Doors. Within the family, there was sort of rank and file, there was bullying, there was incest, all sorts of things that went on. So whatever doesn't kill you make you stronger.
Absolutely.
And so at the age of 20, I escaped and came here.
To Australia.
Yeah, to Australia. And I've been here ever since.
Okay.
Yeah. And my father was born at the end of Chin Dynasty. That was how old he was. He was 16 when I was born.
Wow.
And so it's different era. So coming from a very dictatorial country like Singapore, where chewing gums would be banned, I thought all my Christmas came at once when I came. And then I came at the point of time when the Prime Minister Govindlal was sacked. I was out in the streets. My mother didn't know.
You were protesting.
protesting. I was a maths teacher for a while. And then when I wrote maths curriculum, and then I wrote a text called Magenta's Diaries, using stories, the mathematical context. I was thinking, this is really good. So I took 1 year off and gone into writing instead and never returned after that.
Mm.
Never returned to teaching. And so, yes. So at first I wrote poetry, I write short stories, and in 2010 I self-published The House of the 99 Closed Doors, describing my parents' background from China, escaping the Japanese, and the Japanese followed them into Singapore, and the 19 children that play football at the end of the week, and that all sort of thing, the complication, the whatever. And then I went on to publish Peng's Quest, which is a novel about a Chinese man coming to Australia, from the Australia to work on an illegal passport, a fake passport, and the difficulties that he had gone through, not so much to malign anybody, but really to show that there are desperate people with desperate aims, and people do that because they are desperate.
Right, when you're desperate, you're going to do desperate things. So.
Yeah, exactly.
So Ken came, and he didn't fit in, and then he had fights with his assistant. His assistant was explicitly racist. Peng was implicitly racist. So the both of them sort of fought along until Peng saved his assistant's dog, and they became friends. And then the barrier came down, and they began to talk. But then, with all the prejudices that Peng brought with him, he began to see what pre-assumptions, what his tribal voice was doing to him. That, you know, the Aussies are lazy, they never work hard enough, blah, blah, blah. He began to see that it's not that simple. And Red, his assistant, was saying, come on, look at this. Look, just look at what you're saying. What is coming out of your mouth? Peng doesn't say terribly much, but when caught off guard, his prejudices will come out. And so it's a learning curve for both of them. So he came on a visa, a holiday working visa that would end in 1 year. Every 3 months, he's got to shift to a different place. His end was coming, so he decided to do a course. Although he writes very well, but his spoken English is not quite right. He's got a very strange accent that people find it hard to understand. He fell in love with Julia, his teacher. But Chinese tradition say you cannot fall in love with your teacher because teacher is like your parent. This is no. He just went on and kept on dating her. Again, Julia picked up on his errors and his flaws. And that is all his prejudices that came up. He's macho. That woman has too many rights, he's controlling. And Julia also taught him how to enjoy small pleasures of life. And then maybe his chase for wealth and status, and it's not that important, his quest. But primarily, the whole thrust of Peng's Quest is for people to see that, hey, listen to what your tribal voice is telling you.
Mm-hmm.
Where are your prejudices coming from? What is the media telling you? Is it right? Not so nowadays.
So it sounds like a little bit about what you wrote has to do with your past, even though it's fictional.
Well, I would think that the fact that you emigrated to Australia would give you the insight on how this man would have done that, even though he was in a desperate situation. And speaking of desperate, Cher, I'm desperate to see your beautiful face behind that mask. I think it's time you take it off. Right?
Take it off.
Take it off.
Yes, it's primarily, people are quite happy to welcome in the past people coming in by boats, by whatever. But I want to see this a step further, that if a person like Peng from China, who came through the Cultural Revolution, who had a whole heap of problems with not trusting people, with being judgmental, being regimented, how would people keep their prejudices at bay and be compassionate?
And I think that's a good lesson in life, because that is reality.
Yes.
And, oftentimes when someone thinks they're being prejudiced against, they don't often realize how they're also prejudiced against that same person. And you have to sit back and take a look at yourself and examine yourself a little bit, no matter who you are. We all have prejudices. I mean, that's just human nature.
Yeah, well, the thing is, we're not born with those prejudices.
No, we're taught that.
We're either taught or exposed to them. And the biggest thing is being able to open up and see the other side. Because, like James said, a lot of times people just don't realize that they are the ones that are also prejudiced. They're right. prejudiced against the person that they're holding responsible.
Right. I want to talk a little bit to Adam, and we need to get Adam in here. And Adam, please tell us a little about who you are and what you do. And boy, do you have a large resume. So I don't know if you can mention everything, but please give us a breakdown.
Me to put everything. I sent her a really short resume, and she said, do more, send more. I don't have anywhere near as interesting a background. I grew up in Australia. I started in the world of writing really as an actor. I've always been involved in the theatre more than anything else, really. I've been involved in a little bit of TV, a little bit of I've written a novel and a couple of other kinds of books, but theatre has been my thing since I was about 19, I suppose. I was an actor for a very long time and then started directing plays, but I'm quite a large man, and I was told pretty early on in my acting career that I wouldn't get the roles, the main roles, until probably I was in my 40s, which I am now, and that I was encouraged to try writing. And I wrote a short play, and it was received really well, and that, I guess, cascaded. When you get a little bit of feedback that something you do is good, I suppose you can become a little bit addicted to that, and I then wrote a lot over the last 25 years, I suppose, 25 years. I've written a lot of different plays, a lot of different things, and doing a lot of different work. This is actually the only the second time I've ever adapted a book into a play.
Okay.
And I find that a really challenging thing to do. I've adapted a lot of historical events and things that have happened in the world that I can piece together from research. I've done a lot of that kind of writing, but I haven't done a lot of taking someone else's story and putting it on the stage. And actually, the only other time I've done that, it's with a writer who's not alive anymore. So this is the first time I've worked with someone who is living and breathing and invested in every single decision I make.
And I can tell she's a handful.
I didn't expect the mask, but now
you didn't know what you were bargaining for when you got involved with her, huh?
Yeah, that's right.
Well, I see here so many plays that you've worked on, and you also have you've written. Did you write a book?
Yeah, I've written a couple of novels, but one that the book of mine that sort of has people know about is actually a book that's the history of a local theatre company here, the La Mama Theatre, which is based on La Mama Theatre in New York. It's a theatre in Melbourne, Australia, that's inspired by La Mama Theatre in New York. And both of those theatres are theatres that champion the independent voice and the small sort of unfunded theatre and the little theatre, the theatre in a tiny black room. And that theatre company, La Mama Melbourne, turned 50 recently, and I wrote a book that it wasn't a hardcore history of La Mama. It was really just a book that tried to capture the spirit of La Mama, and I for that I interviewed a lot of different people who've worked at La Mama over the years and included a lot of beautiful photos in that book that just basically tried to evoke what it's like to work at La Mama as an artist, visit La Mama as an audience member, and what it means to have something like La Mama in the community. And that's the book. And actually, not long after I wrote that book, unfortunately, La Mama burned down. So,
oh, wow.
It was timely, and we were glad because a lot of the archives were lost as well. So it was great in many ways that we managed to collect a lot of that stuff together for the book. So they're rebuilding, but it was a big project of the last few years.
Mm-hmm. Well, how nice that you did that, though, to sort of memorialize the theater so that everything, you know, wasn't lost during the period of time that they're rebuilding.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
Adam, why don't you tell us, we already know, we spoke to Cher. Why don't you tell us a little bit about how you came into meeting Cher and adapting that book?
Yeah, Cher put out an ad, actually, looking for someone to adapt the book. And I happened to be the person who was designing the publication that ad went into. And I do a little bit of graphic design as a sort of side job. And I thought, well, I might apply for this. I probably won't get it because it's about an Asian man and it's a Chinese man. It's an Asian story. It's a story of immigration in Australia, a story of racism. And I'm a middle-aged white man, you know. So I thought, it's not really my story to tell. But what I thought I might be able to offer is, because I've done a lot of work with a lot of different voices, a lot of work in the community with a lot of different voices, the one thing I think I can offer is how to bring something from the page onto the stage and make use of all the theatrical elements, not just in the production of the play, but in the writing of the play as well. And turn it into something that can live and breathe this in a different but complementary way to the way that the book lives and breathes. So yeah, I just applied for the job, and Cher hired me. I was probably recommended to her by Liz Jones, who runs La Mama Theatre, where I work and where Cher approached to put the ad in. So and I've got a long, as you know, from writing the book for her, Liz, who runs La Mama, has been working at La Mama for 45 years. So it's, you know, I've got a long background with her. She knows me well, and I think she might have talked me up. I don't. So
I think it's interesting to hear that Cher placed an ad for someone to help write the play. I wouldn't think to do that. I mean, I guess there are sites here in the United States where you can go on the internet and you can place a log line or a synopsis and hope that someone will be interested in your script or whatever. But it never dawned on me to place an ad to have someone take your work. Yeah.
Well, as I said, before I had given the project before, at first I thought I was going to write it. You see, I have actually written a 10-minute play some time ago, and there was staged at Melbourne Town Hall. But then I look at 60,000 words of square to be turned into a play when I've got no background whatsoever to write such a long, you know, lengthy play. I don't think I have the skills. I think I'll keep my skills in the writing of novels.
You know, I think that...
And not deviate too far.
I was just going to say that was a very wise decision, Cher. I feel the same way. I mean, I'm very confident when I'm writing fiction and nonfiction, but I know my skills don't extend to doing screenplays, and I wouldn't attempt to do it. I mean, some people would just say, oh, I'll buy some screenwriting software, and it's not going to be a big thing, and I've been writing for a long time, and they wind up with something that is not a professional effort.
I actually started writing scripts first. The very first thing I ever wrote was a script. I never wrote a novel. And then someone said, in order to get the recognition you need for that script, you might want to think about putting it in a novel format. So for me, it was the opposite. Yep. I had to go and create the novel from the script.
But you had this training to do a screenplay.
No, I did not.
Oh, you did not?
No,
okay.
I went to the university. I went to their library, looked up various formats for writing a script, found one that looked the easiest. And that was before you had your software like Final Draft and stuff out there that was readily available. So you basically were using a Selectric typewriter and you were putting it in that format, which was not as easy.
Not easy.
But, you know, because I'm old. So it took me, you know, I was back in the ancient days of writing.
You're a kid.
Yeah, right. So, you
at
know.
At least to me.
It wasn't the same as it is today. Now you can buy the software. And when I know what Morgan just said, but it truly is easy to write a script today compared to 20, 30 years ago.
I would think so. But all, and Adam, you can probably, you know, verify this. it's a whole different ball game. It's writing the off scene direction. It's writing the action direction. And you know, I would think that you have to know what camera angles are. You have to know.
No, not necessarily.
I mean, I found one of the things I have written, tried to write a couple of screenplays, and even the jump from a theatre play, a stage play, to a screenplay is quite a big thing because, I mean, this isn't a hard and fast rule, obviously, but for a stage play, it's largely about the words and it's largely about the things that an actor's saying. But film, as we know, is a visual medium, and so your brain has to kick into a different gear. But also in terms of the way to set out a play and those programs that you can get to show you how to do a screenplay, I find a little more constricting writing a screenplay because there are such hard and fast rules for how you have to write a screenplay, how you have to format it, how you have to do everything. When you're writing a stage play, you can make up your own rules, and that's something I, as a writer, love to do. I love to look at my pages and know that's my page. No one else's stage play looks like my page. And I mean, I took it from, again, looking like you did, James, from something that, you know, reading in plays in the past, I like the look of that one. But I think you have a lot less constriction when you're writing for theatre than you do when you're writing for
screenplay. When you're writing a screenplay, most screenplays have to be within 90 to 120 pages. And the reason for that is every page represents 1 minute of screen time. And you have to be concise because, first of all, you're not – in a novel and probably more in a play, you're giving more description. You're describing the setting. You're describing the characters. And not so much in a script. It's all driven by dialogue. You do give a set. You do get the scenery pretty much or just – but it's a short synopsis or a short tagline, like one or two sentences. You're not descriptive like you would be – I don't know about the play, but certainly in a novel, you're more descriptive. You leave that up to the director to decide what the setting is. You give him some idea, but then he basically does that whole setup for you. So it isn't the same as writing a novel. You're much more descriptive in a novel.
Well, see, you just validated what I said. It showed how little I know about screenwriting.
It's really hard, you know, to know when – because I write the script first, for me – writing the script is easier. I always hear the opposite. Everyone says to me, well, I've tried writing a script and it's very difficult. Maybe it's because I write the script first and then try and write the novel that it's just easy for me because I'm so used to it.
Yeah. Well, you know, you've had John D'Amour on the show.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And John is in the process of – he is a screenplay writer.
Right.
And he is in the process of transferring all his screenplays into books.
Well, Adam, if you're an actor, you have actually read scripts then, motion picture or television scripts. Yes.
Yeah,
uh-huh.
Yeah. And for me, actually, the biggest leap from being an actor to being a writer for the stage, and I consider myself an actor even when I'm writing in many ways because I acted out a little bit. But the thing that I found hardest, and I struggled with this for probably 2 or 3 years, was actually just being able to see the people on the stage in my head. Just actually being able to see the figures of the people in the stage so that then I could put words into their mouth. And it was a real shift for me to just be from being the person on the stage to then being able to picture people on a stage and then make it right for them. And once my brain was made that leap, then it became easy. Then it was a simple job. But,
it is not easy for Adam to visualize how the Chinese lady in the qipao and all the subtexts that she's going to throw at the audience, all the three different meanings that the Chinese can put out.
In the play, obviously, English is – the whole play is in English. Is that correct? Cher?
Mostly. There is some Chinese.
Oh, there is. So how do you convey that to the audience?
We have them speak all the Chinese that's spoken is translated also into English by other voices. But actually what Cher was just saying is a really interesting thing for me because she creates a character in the book that she describes very beautifully. But because I don't have the cultural references of the woman in the kippa, and I didn't even know how to pronounce that. I've just seen it written down. The woman in the dress, the beautiful kind of Chinese dress. I picture, and I Google what it is, and I picture it in my head when I'm reading. And then I try and translate that onto the page in the play. But then there's going to be another translation that happens later on, past what either of us do, when the director or the designer dresses an actor into the qipao, and the actor stands onto walks onto stage. In that, there's this whole other world that comes alive. So there's three different stages of this the things that are conveyed by that character. There's what Sher originally intends, what I interpret from that, and then what the living, breathing people bring to life on the stage. And I love that transformation from one to the other.
And Adam, you like the part when the chorus comes in and say, "She's lying." She's lying. That was beautifully done.
Adam, what would you suggest to someone if they're interested in to attempt to write a play? What would probably be the first thing you would advise them to do before they start writing it?
See a play. See lots of plays.
Okay.
I think for me, the biggest thing for before you write a play is you try and gather as many different things in that you know the play is going to be before you even begin. So if you see 10 plays in a particular theatre, then you will picture that theatre in your mind when you're writing. So you'll know this is the dimensions of the stage. This is how many characters I can fit on the stage. And so you can, even if you start off with knowing the dimensions of the stage, but then say to yourself, okay, I want to write a play that has 4 characters in it. And then suddenly you can see, okay, the musicality of the play is split between 4 voices. And then you sort of start thinking about the genders, the sexes of the actors and the characters. You think about how long a play you want to write. Is it 10 minutes or 90 minutes? And I think it's just gathering as many things that you know before you start. It will make it so much, it will stop writer's block, essentially. Have a bunch of tools before you even sit down to try to write. And then hopefully, if you know you've got 4 characters speaking for 40 minutes in a stage that you can see in your mind because you've seen plays in that theatre, it'll just, and also obviously you've got to have an idea. What do I want to write about? What is the, not an idea of what I want to, the answer, but the question I want to explore. What's the question I want to explore? Like, what is love? Or what does it mean for a loved one to die? Or what is racism? You know, like, have a question that you want to explore. And if you've got a question you want to explore, you just spend the next 90 minutes trying to answer it. And that's all you need to do.
That's interesting. So you kind of back into it.
Yeah.
It's instead of
deconstructing of it.
Yeah. You create the scenarios that you will need in order to be able to create your characters that'll carry it through.
That's right. Yeah.
Did I interpret that correctly?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's different when I'm adapting someone else's story,
right?
Because I don't have to do any of that invention. It's all been done for me. But what I do have to do is figure out, okay, so how can I, the life that's in the book, how can I bring that life onto the stage and keep it alive and make it flourish? Like that's my job. And then I have to think about, okay, so what tools do I have to work with? I know there's, you know, theatre really is all of the different art forms compressed into one. So you know, you've got every art form that every other artist works with, every medium that every other artist works with, you've got at your disposal if you want to use them. And that's what I have to think about when I'm writing.
And in some ways, it's just like a novel for you. You actually visualize the set itself.
Me? Oh, sure.
No, you, Adam.
Oh, yeah.
When you're writing, wouldn't you also visualize the set, I would think, as well?
Yeah. And I mean, I've known what theatre the initial production of this is going to be in. although it hasn't been built yet because it's being rebuilt. I know what the plans are for it to look like. So I know that we won't. Yeah, I know we're not working in a huge auditorium for the first production. So I know that I have to create a work that will work in a fairly intimate space, but also one that can then have life beyond that intimate space, because, you know, hopefully we have ambitions for it not to just be that initial production.
Right.
So I also, you know, in terms of knowing how much money you're working with is important. And I come from the background of working with no money. So that's freeing as well, knowing that largely you're working with bodies and voices. And you're not working with massive rotating sets. And I saw a play in the Adelaide Festival the other day where, the walls and the floor did amazing things. Romeo Castellucci, who's like, you know, got a lot of money to work with, and we don't have it. So I know those things.
There is a similarity between that and an independent film, because when you're writing a script, if you have the idea in mind that what if a studio doesn't pick this up, it's no different than a novelist. You know, oftentimes a lot of people go out there and self-publish. We're both self-published, and I know Cher, aren't you self-published, Cher?
No, with the memoir it is self-published, but with King's Quest it's published by a small publisher.
Oh, okay. But the point is that you have self-published. So sometimes it's getting the vision on paper and saying, I'm going to get that out there no matter what. And even when you're writing a script, sometimes you have to realize, actually, I'm working one right now where I've had to do that, because a lot of the set takes place in Europe. And part of the discussion I've had with the producers is that we don't have a budget for that to go over there and take a whole cast and film. A lot of it would have to be CGI. You know, you go over there and it's on a train, so you would do the settings and stuff, and then you would come back and use a green screen. So even when you're writing a script, it's like a play in some ways. You have to think about that budget. Like, well, who am I writing for? Am I writing for a studio, or am I writing for an independent film?
Yeah.
I mean, I listened to an interview with the guys who made It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia the other day, and they made their pilot episode of their TV show, I think, for the price of one digital cassette. You know, it was like $12 or something like that. That's all the money they spent, and now they've got, I don't know, 12, 14, 15 seasons of a show. And it showed, like, whenever anyone says to me, I can't make this, especially a play, it's maybe different with a film, but especially a play, because no one will put it on, it's like, well, put it on yourself.
Right.
Find somewhere that you can do it for free, or a take of the door, or, somewhere that sells drinks that they can make money off selling drinks while you put it on.
Well, you recently had the Grammys here, and there were two artists who won awards this year, and one did his entire song for $50. Huh. He produced that song for $50. He actually wrote the lyrics, and he what is called borrowed the melody from YouTube. You paid $30, and it gave him the rights to use that. And then he went to a studio, so he paid $30 for that. Then he went to a studio that offered their studio for $15 an hour in the off hours when they weren't using it. Oh. And he went in, and for a total of $50, he produced that song, which became literally, it's the longest, it's been on the chart 16 weeks, more than any song in history. Ooh. And he did that for $50.
That's incredible.
The other young lady who wrote a song, she and her brother wrote in his bedroom. The whole thing was produced in the bedroom. They did not have an orchestra. They did not have a band. It was all synthesized on the computer. And I think she won like 4 or 5 Grammys. The point is exactly what you said. You just have to have the ambition and the determination that I can do this. And I think even for someone who writes a novel, right now we're talking like it's easy. But Morgan, I know when you started your first novel, you couldn't have thought this is easy. I know I didn't.
My first novel was A Corpse in the Soup from the Silver Sisters series. And my sister and I were both published writers. The thing is, we hadn't written fiction.
Right.
So we thought we had it nailed. You know, we went along. She was a journalist and an advertising specialist, and I wrote magazine articles and newspaper articles, and the rules are all different. So we had our point of view all over the place. We had too much description. We had all kinds of things. And we learned what we didn't know because we got a lot of rejections instead of having, you know, we got to have this book. And so we worked with a manuscript evaluator and completely rewrote the book in the period of a year, got a publisher, and won an award with it. So it was a question of we were obviously seasoned writers, but not in that genre. So we didn't know the rules that came along with it. And I wanted to say something else. You know, you're talking about the passion of getting the project there. And you mentioned that I'd had a book under option to Sony Pictures. Well, that was a really interesting situation. Incest, Murder, and a Miracle is mixed genre, and it's a true story, and it is a story of survival and a story of inspiration from an abuse victim and somebody, her husband, who was dead for 43 minutes from a heart attack and was brought back to life. And Sony supposedly assigned a screenwriter to the project. It was under option for 2 years. And when they dropped it, the explanation was, to some degree, that the screenwriter didn't know how to do the mixed genre. It's now under interest from another group of producers. And they say, we get it. We know how we have to do this thing. So here we are with this big company that assigned a producer and a screenwriter, and they couldn't figure out how to make the book work.
And I think kind of with what Cher did, I actually think that's so fantastic you placed an ad for someone to to do your play. Most people wouldn't think to do that. We go the hard route. We write query letters and send them out and just wait for the rejections to come in. It's also interesting, Adam, that you happen to be the one who was writing that ad. That's just a
word. Send it out, by the way. Other people did apply. It wasn't just me.
Oh, so you did send it out. I thought maybe you held it back.
Yeah. I made sure you went out.
I didn't say, no one else is seeing this.
The whole thing about passion, to me, is a lifetime goal to get the message to people that you have to heighten your awareness for society to survive, to work peacefully, or to some degree an understanding of what is going on with the different forces, with the different migrants and whatever not they're coming in. You have to have to heighten your awareness of what is going through your head to understand your own feelings about things and recognize it and work on it for working towards a more harmonious sort of society.
I think part of what we're all talking about here is that if you want to accomplish something, whether it be write a novel, write a screenplay, or write a script, you kind of have to just get it in your head that don't let anyone tell you can't do it, for one, because I did have that. I was told I didn't have the educational background to write a novel. And the other thing is that you have to just say, I'm going to do this. I don't care how sloppy it is, how it's going to read, because there's always someone who can help you with it. There's always someone who can come along and say, well, you might want to do this, or you might want to go this route. That's what editors are for one thing, or script doctors. You just can't let people talk you out of it. You have to have that determination. And that's kind of what you're saying, Cher. You have to heighten yourself to the point to where I can do this.
Yes,
I'm not going to let anyone tell me no.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I've been in many writers' groups. You got to be very careful because everybody will want to say it's easy to criticize.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. You need to take the parts that you agree with, but you need to have a direction of where you want to go, because you'll be lost otherwise listening to X, Y, and Z all the time, because you get nowhere.
Right.
Some people have revised their first chapters for, I don't know, 5 years.
Yeah, that is so true, Cher. You have to kind of listen to critique and then decide what works for you and what doesn't.
Yeah.
we've got a reading coming up soon of the current play, the draft of the play that we've currently got. It'll be the first time that we have some people read it out in front of an audience. And I've been to a lot of those readings in the past, and everyone's got a different opinion. Everyone's got a different thing they want to say, and people love to have their voices heard in those situations. So, yeah, we've got to be really careful about, okay, so what are we going into this reading looking for? What are the puzzles that we want to put together from this reading, and not just listen to every voice that comes in? We have to be sure of our own voice, at least to an extent.
Well, and then the unfortunate thing is, sometimes with critiques, people say things that aren't kind just because they can.
Right.
There are people like that.
I think it makes them feel like they're more important, they've done is more important or better.
You have to learn how to recognize people like that and how to develop a thick skin.
Yeah.
Because unfortunately, you know, some people who are very sensitive, if they get a bad critique, they're destroyed and put the thing away. And it's so part of being a writer, a playwright, screenplay writer is to have that little tough outer skin so that you can take critique and you can listen to it.
Even myself as an author, you know, I've had to do book signings. And I'm going to be honest with you, I hate book signings. I don't hate them because of meeting the public. I actually like meeting the public. My fear is the critique part of it. Like, what are they going to say if they get the book home and they don't like it? You know, that's what goes through my mind. It's like, and that's very hard to get past when it's your work because it's your baby and you think it's great. And it's kind of like what Morgan said, you're going to have to take the good with the bad. Not everyone's going to like what you wrote. There are some people who think it's fantastic. And that's the hardest thing, I think, for someone who's a creator or an artist in our field to get past is like that rejection. And I know, Adam, you've had to have gone through this with the numerous – I mean, I don't know how many plays are here, but good Lord, there's a lot here.
Well, actually, the play of mine that has been the most successful, that's had productions all over the world and has been produced in production somewhere in the world, well, for about 10 years, it was being produced somewhere around the world in various different languages. That started off, actually, a film company hired me to write what was to be an audition piece for an actor for this thing that had happened, this true story that had happened. And they wanted a 40-minute audition piece because it was going to be a really challenging role for one person. And that never went anywhere. And the film company, I mean, for various reasons, someone else actually picked up that story and made a Hollywood film out of it. I was rejected, essentially, by that film company. And I put that, what I had written, just in a drawer for several years until a girlfriend of mine at the time, who happened to be a director, found it in the drawer and read it and loved it. And as I say, it then just had this massive success. I thought it was garbage. I thought it was terrible because I'd written it for this thing, it was rejected, and I just thought, well, and it also wasn't very like anything I'd written before. So I thought, oh, obviously it's just not very good. But, you know, so I didn't trust the voice that I used when I wrote it. And it was only – sometimes you get opportunities that just open doors for you.
That's true.
And that's why you should never give up. If you really want to do it, and you don't know where it's going to lead you next. And I know, right, Morgan, you've definitely experienced it. I did. My writing led to this radio show. I never set out to ever, ever do radio. It was never something I've ever dreamed I wanted to do, never something I thought I was going to do. But I actually helped people publish in the past, and I actually would help them get their manuscripts ready to go and self-publish and get out there. So I helped her get it out there, and we did a book launching party. And I invited the media, and it was someone who came in from a radio station that actually said to me, well, they asked her, how did you do it? And she says, you need to ask James. He's the one who did it all. And then they came to me and they said, did you ever think about talking about this on the air? And it frightened me because the first show, I remember I froze. I actually hyperventilated. Thank God there was someone on the show who could see that in my face and would start talking. And so the next day when the general manager called me and said, so that was a great show last night. I said, I know it was horrible. He goes, no, it was really good. I said, it couldn't have been because I froze. He goes, well, we didn't hear it on the air. From there, they gave me ideas on how I could do better and make it better. And it just evolved. And I've been doing this 8 years. This is not something I plan to do. So sometimes if you just have the courage to go forward and say, I'm going to do this anyway, whether I fail or not, I'm going to try. You don't know where it's going to lead to. You don't know what's going to happen next.
Right. And like in my instance, I basically write funny mysteries. That's what I enjoy doing. And I was approached to co-author a memoir for a woman who was an abuse survivor, had an amazing background and story. And I'd never done anything like that. The person who approached me was Dennis N. Griffin, who writes a lot of true crime, and he's a true crime historian. And I wanted to politely say, well, thanks, but no thanks. And I said, well, I'm really busy. And he said, well, let me send you this woman's bullet points before you say no. He said, because I really need a female co-author on this. There are certain things that I need those emotions, and I know you've had PTSD, and she has it, and I really would like you on this project. So he sends me the bullet points, and I start going down them, and I'm thinking this woman has to be like 70 years old to have all these things happen to her and survive all these things. But when I got to a bullet point, you probably don't know what the Crips are, but the Crips are a notorious gang in the United States. When I saw that she was a female white woman leader in the Crips, I said, no, I have to know more about this. Okay, so I helped to write her story. She became a surrogate daughter to me. That was an added bonus. She's one of the most amazing women I've ever met. I became an advocate for abuse awareness and abuse prevention, which is something I never thought I would do. And then another project came to me, which is The Incest Murder and a Miracle, which was another amazing story of an abuse survivor. And I co-authored that book, and I gained another surrogate daughter. So I love these two girls like they're my own.
You know? It's kind of like with Cher. Yeah. I'm sure that since you've met Adam, that's opened up a whole new world for you there. Adam.
Do we censor your remarks here?
Well, at least it's opened up a whole new world for Adam, if nothing else.
Yeah, I mean, I'm doing something I've got very little experience doing, just in taking Cher's words and trying to put them on the stage and trying to negotiate how to do that. And I'm learning heaps from it. I think that you will, when you see your this novel up on the stage that you didn't feel like you had the skills to adapt yourself, you're going to see so many things that, oh, I know that now. I know what that is.
Right.
Now. And maybe next time.
You'll write the play. Yeah. Cheryl write the play. And that's exactly what we're talking about.
Yeah, it can turn into an amazing learning experience along with your own expertise.
Yeah.
Well, yes, it's always good to learn something new. As I said, I've done very short plays in the past and enjoyed it. You know, naughty plays.
So this will give you the courage to write your own in the future. Well, we're about to run out of time here. So first I want to ask Cher, where can we learn about your books? Because you have a couple there. And so why don't you tell us about where we can go to get your book?
Oh, go and get my book?
No, on the internet. Where can you? You could go get it, but the audience won't see it that's listening. So, but where can they go get it on the internet?
I think Amazon.
Okay.
Is possibly still selling it. The unfortunately, the publisher, being very small, has gone bankrupt.
Oh.
But I've got 30 of them sitting here. If people want, they can write to me on my email.
Okay, what's your email?
Okay, I'll it's cchizzy@gmail.com.
And it's C and it's C-H, it's C-C-H.
I-D. Zey at gmail.com. C for China.
C said Z. You're right.
H for Hong Kong. I for India. D for Denmark. Z for Zoo. E for England. Y for York at gmail.com.
Okay.
If they write to me, right.
And Adam, where can we learn about your work? And then an after that, I want you to tell us where we can also, where, what's going to go on with the play, when it's going to come out.
So my work, I mean, my best known play is a play called I Love You Bro, which if people are interested in that, they can find it on a website called, they can order it from playlabpublishing.com.au maybe. But if they search for I Love You Bro by Adam J. A. Cass, they'll find a link to that. There'll be several places where they could get that. If they're interested in my book about La Mama Theatre, I don't know if they will be, but they could contact La Mama Theatre in Australia. I'm the person who answers the emails there. So.
Boy, you're all over the place, aren't you? You're interfering in everyone's...
Yeah. I'm a writer. I have to have 400 different jobs. So. But yeah, also if they're interested just generally in my other work, yeah, they can email me too, just at adam_cass@hotmail.com if they're interested in that. I'm be willing to send anyone any of my work.
Okay.
if they want to put on a production of something I've done somewhere around the world. But yeah, as for the play, the Ken's Quest play, we are about halfway through the writing process of it. We have a play reading of it coming up in April, which will then inform the third draft, which may be the final draft, or maybe one other draft after that. We'll just see. And then hopefully when La Mama is rebuilt in 2021, not hopefully, it will go ahead. I'm just not sure exactly when. there will be a production in Melbourne of the play, which, if it goes well, will be the first of many.
Well, you'll come back on the show, hopefully, before the play is on stage and let us know what's going on. We'll talk about it again.
We'll be much more advanced in our stress with each other about the writing process.
By the way, people can access information on Ken's Quest on the Facebook page. There is a Ken's Quest Facebook page.
So it's KENSQUEST?
Yep.
Yeah.
.com?
Yeah. Yeah.
She's looking it up. It's not in your notes.
No.
Well, while you're doing that, real quick, tell everyone where they can get your books.
Okay, my books are all on Amazon, on Barnes & Noble, on just about every online bookseller internationally. And my website is www.morganstjames, that's STJAMES.com. And you'll find out more about me than you really want to know. You'll find things about my books, and I invite you to visit my website.
All right, so now where can we go to find out about Ken's Quest?
Yep.
It's Ken's Quest Book at... that's the Facebook page, is Ken's Quest Book. That's just what...
All right, and that's on Facebook?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, okay. All right, well, I'd like to thank my guest, Adam J.A. Cass and Cher Chisney. Chisney, correct?
Chisney.
Yeah, all right. And until next week, this is your host, James Kelly, reminding you, if you can dream it, you can write it. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mom.
Thank you for listening to Aspects of Writing. We hope you will join us next week as we discuss every aspect of the writing industry. Until then, if you can dream it, you can write it.